Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante and with me is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, another week closer to actual football.
I know. This is like the time of year where it feels like the off season just drags on, and then now it's like the snap of a finger we're going to have football, because while our teams don't play for a few weeks, but there's some week zero games that'll get us there even quicker to kind of whet our appetite a little bit.
There is. I haven't looked at the schedule. Is there any decent games week zero?
I know USC plays. I don't know who they're playing. I'm going to see if I can bring it up really quick just to get. Looks like North Carolina TCU is playing on that Saturday. USC plays San Jose State, Virginia, North Carolina State, Stanford, Hawaii, Florida State, New Mexico State. So not like great games, but there's some intrigue there.
Oh yeah, I am like all in on watching Bill Belichick coach.
You know what? That's totally fair.
Yeah, all in on it. I tell you what though, before we get into some of the other things in college football, I'm hoping you could help me out with something. Okay.
Oh boy.
You know I'm a Penn State guy. You know that I am. But I'm looking to expand my fandom. I'm looking to pick up a second team, maybe. I'm thinking like in the Midwest somewhere. Maybe a team in the state of Indiana. But here's the criteria. I would like to follow a team that has a chance to win championships. Can you help out a friend here?
Yeah, I have a guy that I can direct you to that might be able to help you out with this pitch that you have. Yeah, obviously Jim's talking about Tommy McClellan, the new Purdue AD, who made a comment that was probably unwise to make, saying, you know, he's here to win championships at Purdue, and if you don't want to win championships, go to Indiana. This, of course, a mere, 7 months after Indiana won a national championship in football and just had one of the best stories in the history of sports. So I don't know much about him prior to becoming the Purdue AD, but probably not one of his finer moments as an athletic director.
Now, is he new to the job?
He's new to Purdue, but he's been an AD, I don't know his actual years, but he was the deputy AD at Vanderbilt. He was the AD at McNeese State, the AD at Rice, and the AD at Louisiana Tech. So more than a decade. I want to say it's like 15 years or something. I don't remember the exact year.
He should know better.
Yes. Do you know what's funny is that, and I'm not making, and I don't know obviously for sure if this is how this went, but as soon as he said it, I feel like I can read body language fairly well. And as soon as he said it, I told my wife, I was like, I think he regrets saying that. Like immediately I said that. And he went on some shows and was like, as soon as it left my mouth, I knew. And I think it was just an attempt to like rile up some fans, gain support. But even Purdue fans were like, oh boy, this is for a team that's lost to its arch rival 122-3 over the last 2 years. Maybe not best to tick off potentially the best coach in college football right now.
Well, I'm sure Cursignetti will take it in the spirit it was intended, and he'll, you know, kind of take it easy this year on those Boilermakers. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what he's going to do.
I think he's going to definitely want to put up at least half 100 on him. That's Cursignetti. Well, I'll tell you what I found interesting about it. Pat Kraft is the Penn State athletic director, and many people feel that he botched up the coaching search, not by ending up with Matt Campbell, but his process in getting there, how long it took, made it more difficult to retain the recruiting class, blah, blah. I'm not quite as adamant about it, but he's not a favorite right now among Penn State fans. And one of the best quotes I saw was, not even Pat Kraft would say something that dumb.
You know what? It wasn't a good, it was not a good thing to say. And I think, again, a lot of people, Purdue was the butt of a lot of jokes. If you want to look for a silver lining, and maybe there's not one here, but if you want to try to look at the positive, like, nobody was talking about Purdue beforehand. And so they at least got some national publicity, right? So I don't, I mean, they were the talk of the town for the better part of 2 days, Thursday and Friday, I would say. So if nothing else, at least Purdue's name was thrown out there. Not maybe the way you want it to be associated with, but nonetheless, people were talking about Purdue, and otherwise they would not be.
You know what? I thought you were going to say at least the silver lining, the good news to all this is basketball season's not too far behind football.
That's actually also true. So there's another positive. Just a month after, like, I think it's almost a month to the day after football kicks off, we'll have Big Ten basketball media days. So there you go. Another silver lining.
And unfortunately for Penn State folks, basketball season isn't too far behind. So, and speaking of dumb things, just if in case you haven't heard it, we've already kind of covered this on other shows, but Pat Kraft, when asked about Penn State basketball, essentially gave the answer, it's just throwing good money after bad. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I actually did read that quote, and I thought, ooh, poor Mike Rhodes. Because I know he hasn't been that successful, but I actually do like him. I think he's a good guy. You know, I know good guy and good coach are two separate things, but he does seem like a genuinely good dude, and I think if he had the resources, he could be a winning basketball coach. I don't know if, I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that Penn State's not going to give him the resources to be a top-tier coach in the Big Ten.
It is pretty obvious, but again, as an athletic director, you've got to phrase these things a little bit differently. Sure. And, you know, it's like, hey, we're going to see what we can do about adding to the budget. We know it's been tough. Someone said to me, well, why get upset with him telling the truth? Well, you know, there's ways to present the truth, okay? And I don't think he did a great job at it.
Well, to that point, there's nothing wrong with telling the truth, and I understand where fans are coming from. Like, if you say, hey, this is how it is, there's an expectation there. But there's a couple things that you need to remember. One, what is a recruit thinking when they say that? Like, you can muddle, and I don't want to say muddle the truth, but you can put lipstick on a pig. I don't know if you've heard that phrase before, Jim, but that's a Midwestern thing.
Yeah, it has reached the East Coast. We have.
It did it? Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay, good. Didn't know if it had ventured out that far. But so you can do that, and then you can still appeal to recruits and say, hey, you know, we're struggling right now, but if you come here and we can get some other guys, maybe we can turn things around. The other thing is that when you say that, there's no chance then that fans are going to buy tickets to go to games. And the Penn State already had that problem. So you need to, again, as you mentioned, you can phrase things a little bit differently that still gives your fans some level of hope with a little bit of reality. I think that you can find that perfect mixture. I'm not good at that, but I'm also not an athletic director making $1 million a year.
Well, and also you can point out something else very valid. At Penn State, first of all, just the sheer number of sports that they have, but they also have the best wrestling program in the country. They have a very good hockey program going on. So those are other sports that need to be supported too. So you could frame that as part of it. And also, you want to give teams hope. And in fact, Penn State basketball, they were like the Indiana football of basketball for so many years. And Indiana was able to turn it around. And yes, as you point out, they started getting more money coming in, Well, maybe that's the way you frame it, that, you know, we're looking for more resources for the team because we know we've got the right coach there, the right culture. You know, you paint a lot differently. My biggest takeaway, though, from it is probably Mike Roach probably has just one more year in him, okay? Yeah. And he, you know, probably they're going to struggle again. Would you not want to be the fly on the wall when Pat Kraft has to talk to Mike Rhodes about losing his job? Okay. Yeah. If you're Mike Rhodes, well, you even said it. You're not giving me any resources.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, so then when you say that out loud, who is going to take that job? I don't like, oh yeah, I want to walk into a place that's not going to give me the resources I need to win. Great. That sounds fun. I don't like, so there's a lot of things that like, you can say that, you can be truthful, but you got, again, I'm just going to go back to your point. You can cover it up and maybe make it sound a little bit better. The other thing to me is, and I don't know, like, you can't, I know this is a college football show, now we're talking about basketball, but
that's okay.
to this point, like, I don't know, you can't bankroll, one person can't really bankroll a football team, although Mark Cuban did get Fernando, like, Mark Cuban didn't help. He helped Indiana win a national championship, but it wasn't him alone. But Penn State, if there was one big-time donor who was a big basketball guy, you could probably say, hey, you can be the difference for us. You could, if you donate X million dollars, that could be the difference between us finishing in the bottom of the Big Ten and being an NCAA tournament team. You could potentially do that with one guy or one donor in college basketball. I'm not saying you would compete with like North Carolina and Indiana and some of those other schools that have big time payrolls, but it can't be that hard to be middle of the pack, especially with 76 teams now in the NCAA tournament, to be one of those contenders. It just takes one guy. I don't know why that wouldn't be a pitch and just be like, hey, like your name's going to be on everything associated with Penn State basketball. Do you want to be a part of this?
And Penn State, there is precedent for that type of thing. You know the name Terry Pegula? His name is on the hockey arena. His name is on – the entire program exists because one man decided it was going to exist. Sure. Okay? And you don't need the new arena, which Pegula put up, you know, for basketball. You have that. You're 100% right, and that should be – that's Pat Kraft's job. That should be his role, to look for that person who could help them out, turn that around. All right, Dustin, enough of that conversation. We got lots more to talk about, and it's actually going to be college football when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number two of our show. Dustin, I fibbed a little. I said we'd come right back with college football. How about we come back with college sports in general? I wanted to ask you about the Protect College Sports Act. We've been talking about this for a while now. And the vote, they hoped the vote for the bill would have came in last week before Congress goes on recess for 5 weeks. I wish we'd get 5 weeks off, Dustin. But anyway, that's another discussion for another day. They did not get the vote in, a lot of grandstanding going on. But I think the starting point in any conversation with this is, do you want the government meddling in collegiate sports?
God, Jim. Traditionally, my answer would be no. Keep it as far away as possible because they're taking a 5-week recess and I want my money back. How about that? So that's number one. Number two is, though, there's no real governing body anymore. Like, the NCAA can try to enforce rules, but everything just gets appealed and taken to court and they lose every battle. So you've got to do something. I'm not shocked that Congress couldn't get anything accomplished with this. I will give some people credit for trying. Ted Cruz, I don't remember who the other senator was, but trying to at least do something where you're trying to regulate the rules. I really wouldn't want it to come to government intervention, but I don't know what the other answer is, because here's the thing that I keep coming back to. The SEC and the Big Ten have said, you know, and that's, I think more so the SEC has said, well, we'll just break off because the NCAA can't enforce its own rules. But I don't understand why the SEC would then think that their rules would be able to be enforceable if the NCAA's is not. Oh, you have a point. Okay. Go ahead.
I do. I think the argument to that is the NCAA is pretty much a monopoly. So mm-hmm. I think that's the legal issue that people suing the NCAA will go to. If the Southeast Conference breaks off, I think the fact that you could say to a player, hey, if you don't like our rules, go somewhere else and play. You could go play in the Big Ten. Now, the problem with that theory is if you're the Southeast Conference and say, hey, we're enforcing our, say we have a $20 million payroll limit, and the Big Ten has a $40 million payroll limit, guess where all the best players are going to go? And it's not the SEC. That's particularly – well, the two things that get me with it is – that point, first of all, for the SEC, I mean, like, those teams would never cheat. You know that if the Southeast Conference is going to have their own rules. So in my mind, the second point to this is it's all a bluff when the Southeast Conference says something like that.
I would agree with that, because here's what I think could happen, because I had not – I mean, the monopoly argument makes sense. It's not something I had thought about, but I also am not like – a legal person. Then I would get together with the other conferences and just say, these are going to be our set rules, give or take. You might have something, you know, let's say the SEC says, okay, if you transfer within a conference team, you have to sit out a year. The Big Ten says, we don't care, you can play right away or something. But so you could have some but if they were able to set some guidelines where it's basically the same, and they could enforce that, then I'd be all for that. That would be better than the government getting involved. Whether or not those things would be then enforceable, I don't know. We'll see. That would, to me, that would be a best case scenario. Like, get all of these commissioners together to agree largely on some structures. And then if you want to have little differences within the conference, that would be maybe there's a, you know, you probably can't really do the red shirt thing because that's out the window too. But you could probably manipulate some different rules. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but the transfer rule would be one I could think of off the top of my head that you could kind of manipulate where it doesn't make maybe a huge difference, but enough of one to where it's not the exact same guidelines and bylaws in every conference.
Well, here's where I think the problem is, and I'm going to go back to the original question about government intervention. We already have government intervention, but it's in the form of the judicial system. Mm-hmm, it's the judges stepping in. So far be it for me to ever defend the NCAA. And it pains me to do that. But they can't put rules out there if everybody it takes it to court and a judge, an activist judge, overrules it. And the problem with it, it's typically in a state – where that's a school from that specific state will benefit. Like, there is no more absolute rule in all of sports than you don't gamble. And you especially don't gamble on your own sport, and you really don't gamble on your own team. Well, Sorsby, the quarterback for Texas Tech, he broke all of those rules, all of them. if there was ever a universal rule, that was it. Well, it goes in front of a Texas judge who says, nah, he could play. Well, how do you beat that? And that's the problem, and why I would, as someone who is, I don't want any government intervention in anything. However, who else? Nobody else could take charge because of these judges. And by the way, I don't know if you saw this, Dustin. The Protect College Sports Act, one of the issues they had was a senator from Florida who didn't want one of the rules because she was looking to protect Miami and Florida State's ability to change conferences. So there you go again. It's that provincial attitude from the different states. How do you beat that except with the federal law?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I don't think you can. I don't know. But it's become a giant mess, and I still think we're going to get to the point where you're going to have to collectively bargain at some point so you can enforce these rules. Now, what that looks like, I don't know, but you're going to have to – student-athletes are going to have to become employees, whether that's within a school, within the Big Ten Conference, within the NCAA as a whole. I doubt that part happens, but – you know, we'll see how this goes. I'm with you. I don't want government intervention in pretty much anything, but I don't know where else you turn right here because nobody's been able to accomplish anything. And by the way, I guess the monopoly argument maybe, but like I always say this. I was a Division III athlete, so not even close to the same thing, right? But you have to sign contracts that say that you understand and agree to these terms, and these are the rules that will be applied to you. And I don't know how you can just throw all of that out the window. But I'm not a legal beagle, so far be it from me. That's my final stance on that, because it just makes – like, especially the gambling. 2 hours, Jim. Every year you had to sit in and watch videos and understand, like, the repercussions of gambling and all – and for that to be completely thrown out, I'm like, of all the rules that you want to just completely overlook, that one, that you like, there is no question that that was hammered home, not only from like a societal standpoint, but from an NCAA standpoint. You do not gamble. You cannot even fill out a bracket for the NCAA tournament if there is a prize involved. Doesn't matter if it's a t-shirt or $100,000, you can't do it. I don't know. I don't know how all of this stuff gets thrown away by judges, but I don't know the legal system very well. Hopefully I never have to.
Well, see, and that's the problem. When you take a rule like that, which I think 99.9% of the population would say, hey, you enforce that rule. It's good and proper and all of those things. And one judge could totally throw it out, set a precedent, and you've got the problems you do. And it turns out it's only the government that could step in and fix it. And like I said, I know, you know, the judicial system, the legislative branch, they are two different areas of government, but they are government still.
Yeah.
So it's these judges interfering that causes us to have to go other. And just one last point that was brought up in the whole congressional argument with the Protect College Sports Act, and I don't know if you saw this, and this may be definitely a rabbit hole we don't want to go down, but a couple other senators, the federal rule, which I think is wonderful, it would supersede the states. So you can't have some state saying, well, our NIL rule will be different to make it more more easy for players to get money and so on, giving our local teams an advantage. I don't know if you saw this, but a couple senators, wait a minute. We already have state laws over participation in women's sports. You have to be a biological man. So that rule is in some states that exists. They didn't want this to override that rule. And again, you have another controversy already.
Yeah, that's one that I really also don't understand. That to me goes hand in hand with gambling, but that's probably a controversial stance, but it makes the frustrating thing, Jim, is I feel like I have this conversation every single day, and it just makes that one makes no sense to me.
So as long as we're on the topic, could you define a woman for me?
Yeah. So here's the one thing that I'm going to say, and I'm actually not going to talk about that because, again, I will get really heated really quick, and I don't think we want this show to go off the rails. But what I would say is the one thing that I think is really kind of unfair, if states already have no state income tax, that's fine. But you have states that are trying to or already have passed laws that say NIL is non-taxable in our state. You can't do that. Come on. Like, if I was a resident of one of those states, I would be PO'd. I'd be like, well, this is my NIL deal. Like, I'm sorry, I work as a writer. This is my NIL. My name, image, and likeness is all over all of my things, non-taxable income. That's the kind of stuff that they shouldn't be doing in college. It just makes it such a wild mess. And I understand that means some states like Tennessee, Texas, Florida will have an advantage, but that's how it is. Like, it's not going to be that big of an advantage.
All right. Salty Dustin. We love it. All right, Dustin. That is going to be it for – what quarter are we in? Quarter number two. That's going to be it. See, you got me flustered here. That is it for quarter number two. Lots more to go right after this.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. I'm very confident of that, Dustin. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. And we had the off-air conversation about everything that's going on in the WNBA. And, Dustin, that's where we're going to leave it, okay? There's enough controversy and issues with college sports. We don't need to go to other sports to look for more trouble. Let's get back to something, again, we've talked about before, the conversation about increasing the number of teams in the college football playoffs. We know the Big Ten is looking, they want it to be 24 teams. The Southeast Conference, they're holding out on it. It kills me, though. They're having the meeting with every league commissioner and the Notre Dame athletic director.
I know. They've always got to include Notre Dame in this.
They do. But the part that gets me, and you and I are both Big Ten homers, but when I start hearing quotes like this from Tony Petitti, if we find the value, I think it changes the tone of the conversation. And he was talking about the 2014 playoff. Let me translate for you. We need more money. That's all it is. We want more money. The other issues, they're side issues, Dustin. We can throw them in the conversation, but here's the bottom line. The bottom line is the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other reason why you expand to 76 teams in the NCAA tournament. There's no need to go to 24 teams in a college football playoff. There's just not. And so this is the time, remember we were talking about, remember, as if this happened 8 years ago. We're having the conversation about Pat Kraft and maybe, you know, carefully wording how you're supporting separate programs within. This is a time where I do wish that Tony Petitti would just be like, yeah, we need more money. You see where college athletics is heading, and in order to support our coaches, student athletes, our schools, XYZ, we got to have more money. And this is an easy way to capitalize on the opportunity. I mean, that to me is pretty cut and dry. Everybody can see through. That's why they want to do this, to create more money. The only thing, I'm against 24 teams. I think 12 is, if you wanted to go to 16 and then nobody gets a bye, I'm fine with that, actually. But I think that that should be the maximum. 24 teams is, again, an ugly, weird, odd number. The one thing I would support on this is we don't need a conference championship games anymore. These conferences don't matter. The Big Ten championship game doesn't matter. It matters in terms of money. Maybe it matters in terms of, like, yeah, Indiana won its first conference outright title since the four, maybe 67 or something. I don't remember what the year was. So maybe that's, you know, a cute little note on the side. But in terms of just like the overall space the sport is in right now, conference championships really don't mean anything.
Well, you know, you and I had talked about this a while back. The conference championship game is an additional week, and you need that week if you're going to go to 24 teams. What if, and the argument for cutting back the regular season by a game to free up that week doesn't work either because of financial things. What if they did, and I know this is something you and I have talked about, having that reserve that last conference game for a championship week, first place versus second place, and then just work your way down, third versus fourth, fifth versus sixth. And if you need to do the planning, the scheduling, do it like you would have done if there were two divisions. You know, this year, this division is hosting. So first versus first, and then work your way down where you would still have everyone play the same number of regular season games. But that one week you would include a conference championship game. Is there a problem with that, Dustin?
I actually like that idea. I've liked this idea for a long time, ever since, probably even before 2020 when they tried to implement it that final week of the regular. I think it was the same as the championship week. I don't really remember. But no, I think that that's a perfectly fine. If you wanted to have, you know, a 10-game season or an 11-game season and then just say, all right, here's how we're going to do this and order it, and everybody gets this one last game so all of your fans are still involved. And I don't know, maybe you could add some incentive with it. I don't know if there would be, but maybe, you know, hey, 17th and 18th, they're playing for, everybody on their team gets an extra $500 or something like that. You could probably incentivize it. We have that with tournaments now in college basketball, college volleyball. There's NIL opportunities. You could probably do something like that. It could be like a glorified bowl game, like just, you know, have a sponsor for, I don't know who's going to sponsor the Maryland Rutgers game, but you could do something along those lines. But you know what I'm saying? There's ways that you could potentially add some intrigue to those at the end of the season. But I like the conference championship games to me. Yeah, it's fun because there's eight or nine of those games, however many conferences there are. But this is like, we have 18 teams. Like, there's no true champion, really. Come on. We're not playing. You're playing half of the conference. So what do we really know? Now, I think in some years you have a clear champion. Like last year, Indiana was pretty clearly the best team in the Big Ten. But, you know, I don't know. I think that's the easiest thing to do is to go. I would go back to an 11-game schedule and do what you're saying. 10 games, I would make them all. I would have one preseason game that doesn't count, all 10 conference games, and then your 11th game is then that final final week of the season where you implement what you're saying.
I like it. Now, you mentioned who's going to sponsor Rutgers, Maryland. Make it the overall sponsor for play-in week or whatever you're calling it. Toyota, you know, sponsors the whole thing. And maybe you do something that the Big Ten threw out there before. I like 1 versus 2, 3 versus 4, 5 versus 6 makes it very competitive, the game. But you could also, it could also help you then, as you move your way down, layer the bowl games. You know, hey, if it's between team 7 and 8, let them play to earn the better bowl game. Or you could do the 3 versus 6 and 4 versus 5 to try to differentiate at the top. You know, the teams that it's another data point when determining who makes the playoffs.
Right. And I think one of the things I think would be interesting here is at the bottom of the conference, you're probably talking about somewhere between 2 and 4 wins, right? And in the middle of the conference, and I do have a point with this, you're probably looking somewhere between 5 and 7 wins, maybe 8, depending on what your non-conference looks like. But I think what would be interesting too is what you could do is, let's say, and I don't know how the math works out, so I'm just throwing out numbers here, but let's say you have the 12th team, and logically you would say, okay, you know, 11's going to play 12 or 12's going to play 13. Well, let's say the number 12 team is in this situation, they are 5-5 after 10 games. And again, I'm going back down to an 11-game schedule. They're 5-5. Well, they are – maybe it's not the most intriguing, but they get to play team number 18 because there's a big difference between finishing 6-5 and finishing 5-6. So, you know, maybe there's an incentive there for that team. So, you know, you're not getting Ohio State versus Purdue in the final game, and but you're going to get, you know – maybe Nebraska against UCLA or something like that, right? So you might see something a little bit more competitive in that 13 versus 18. And there's, again, some sort of incentive. Can UCLA potentially spoil Nebraska getting its 6th win? Or can Nebraska get that and finish on the positive side of 500? I think there's a lot of ways that you can layer it and have a lot of fun with it, is my point.
We're going off on a tangent here a little bit that I didn't expect, but it's intriguing to me. How about this, Dustin, looking at some of the odds and where teams are supposed to finish in the Big Ten. Let's just – Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana are the 3 best teams. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the highest tier. The next tier, you probably have USC, Michigan, and Penn State as the next tier. Correct?
Yep.
Let's say we're going to do 1 versus 2, 3 versus 4, 5 versus 6. How about this for a weekend of games? USC playing Oregon, Indiana playing USC, and Penn State playing Michigan. Not a bad lineup.
No, not at all.
And if we took it a little further, Iowa versus Washington. I kind of like that matchup.
Yeah.
Next would be Nebraska, Illinois. Again, not a bad matchup. I understand, you know, at the bottom you have Michigan State playing Purdue. I get it. But
right
at the top, you're going to have 4 or 5 games that are definitely worth watching. So, but, you know, getting back to our point about, you know, this 24-team playoff, what's aggravating to me, Dustin, is the argument is Southeast Conference versus Big Ten, but it's actually ESPN versus Fox.
Yeah.
Fox has no part of the playoffs. If it went to 24 teams, they probably would. ESPN, they have locked in the 12-team playoff. It's all theirs. And, oh, by the way, the conference championship games, other than the Big Ten, it's all theirs. ESPN has no incentive for a 24-team playoff.
Right, and I think they have that contract to 2031, which is probably why the Big Ten is pushing so hard to get to 24 teams so they can siphon off some of those to Fox. What I would do is in – you can't wait 5 years to do something, but I rather than allowing ESPN, and I don't know how they got away with it, but allowing ESPN to have all those games, to me, just restructure the contract. Now, ESPN's not going to do that, but can you find a way to say, hey, you know what? ESPN gets 2 games, Fox gets 2 games, CBS gets 2 games, NBC gets 2, however the math is going to work there. Maybe ESPN can still get a majority, but you have to include other networks. I've never understood how, like, ESPN having SEC and ACC network ties, having the college football ranking show and then airing games has not been a conflict of interest, because then there's some incentive for that selection committee to pick certain teams. And as we've seen, the split is now just – like, if you look at Twitter – there's like ESPN people are just making up lies for this.
I'm going to explain to Dustin when we come back why he is so naive right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. And when we were finishing up quarter three, we were talking about the potential to expand the 12-team playoffs, maybe the 24 teams. And the point you were making, Dustin, was? This is where you kick in.
ESPN has all the rights.
And they do. And as you started out, first of all, they have the contract. So Fox and anybody else could have bid at the time, and they didn't. So the ESPN got it locked in. The other point that you made was with ESPN covering the Southeast Conference, owning the SEC television network, the ACC television network, you talked about the potential for a conflict of interest. The mistake you're making there, Dustin, is you're talking about journalism integrity and you're talking about ESPN in the same sentence.
It's true. Well, see, and here's the thing that bugs me is there was a Peter Burns, and I'm not afraid to use his name because he's become Peter Bums, if you want to mix that together. But there was a tweet about, like, I think they came out with the USA Today coaches poll last week, I believe it was. And he wrote something about basically, I don't remember what the number was, 9 SEC teams, I believe, play at least 6 ranked opponents in the USA Today coaches poll. And he said none of them, no Big Ten team plays more, has that many. And right off the bat, I'm like, well, Purdue does. I know that for a fact. And maybe it was 5 ranked teams. It might have been 5. And then you go down the list, and it like there were Ohio State, Indy. I don't remember all the teams on there, but there were several Big Ten teams that also play that many ranked opponents. And it's like, well, you're just flat out lying at this point. And so it's like this is what bothers me is it's like if there would still be this network diversion where Fox is going to support the Big Ten and Big 12 and the ESPN is going to support the SEC and the ACC. It drives me nuts because to me it's ruining the sport. And I know ratings have probably never been higher, but dear God, Jim, I cannot talk about the college football playoff in July. I want to watch the actual games and not project what I think. Like, it's fine to have prediction shows and talk about that stuff, but when it's constantly just playoff, 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 it wears me out, and I can't believe it hasn't happened to other people, but maybe I'm getting too old for this.
Well, I think the original point you make about the Southeast Conference and ESPN are in bed together, the Big Ten and Fox, they're together. And we know that and we're aware. And the Southeast Conference has been, for so many years, the elite conference. They're deep. They win the national championship. They had the dominant team in Alabama, and then it looked like Georgia was taking that over. They had reason to argue that they were the best conference in the country. Well, guess what? 3 years in a row now, the Big Ten has won the national championship. The SEC, sorry, you lose out now. But you know what? This year, next year, it could completely turn. Go win it on the field. Go win bragging rights on the field. And you can't do that beating each other up. You do that come the playoffs. You do that come bowl game time when they when these schools do play each other. I kind of like this rivalry thing. I love it when there's – I love it when Pat Narducci says something stupid about Penn State because it's part of that rivalry thing. And I don't know if you – it was the point you were making about the Purdue AD. People are talking about Purdue now because he said something stupid about Indiana. So it works with the rivalry. So in that way, I don't mind so much. I just don't want it spilling into, as you said, the committee for the college football playoffs with their vote. You hope that they're smart enough to see through any of that ridiculous stuff that's being recited by these coaches and ADs.
I think, to me, I've just reached a point of exhaustion where it's just constantly bickering between the two conferences. And to like, I like the rivalry thing. Here's to my point. As an outsider, I also love when Pat Narduzzi says stuff. It is fantastic. But he usually, I mean, I know he did call out the Big Ten and the SEC and has done that in the past. But to me, I like when he says stuff about Penn State. Because there is at least a rivalry there.
Yes.
Right? Like, I like the individual rivalry stuff. I like when somebody comes in and talks, you know, if I'm the new Alabama AD, I want to talk smack about Auburn or LSU. Like, that stuff to me is fine because it's usually, then you go out and you prove it on the, like, they don't, the Big Ten and the SEC probably play, like, what, three total games against each other in the regular season? And here's the yes. other thing that bothers me, and this is away from the rivalry type stuff, but the other thing that bothers me is the SEC is constantly griped about the 9-game schedule, like, oh, it's so tough, and we're not going to be, you know, we just beat each other up, and it's going to make us even weaker. Well, the 8-team schedule didn't hurt you, didn't help you when you were losing the last three national championships. This all they haven't even made the championship game. So, like, the number of games clearly doesn't matter. What are we – very clearly, NIL is what changed the game. It has nothing to do with the schedule. It has everything to do with the number – or the dollars and cents, not the number of anything. The dollars and cents. The number of games is going to be irrelevant because guess what? The SEC also has crappy teams in there. Everybody's got – maybe not everybody has – not to throw my team under the bus here, but everybody's got a Purdue, right? Like, they may not be quite as bad, but Mississippi State is not good. Like, there are some bad teams in there. So somebody's going to get those cupcakes. And I think you've said this before. It's not about who's in your conference. It's about who's on your schedule. Because there are times when you might play 8 ranked opponents on your schedule, and then there are other times when you might get 2. And it's just like, whew, we won the luck of the draw that time. I think that's just how it works. The number of games to me does not – you can't make that – if the SEC had continued to win and you thought 9 games is really going to hurt, then fine, whatever. I'll listen to your argument because you're winning. But you're not. So clearly 8 games doesn't give you an advantage anymore.
I love when you get salty about the Southeast Conference. It's perhaps one of my favorite things on this show.
I feel like I put salt in a salt sandwich all show.
I'm okay with it. I really am. And, you know, the point you make, too, and it's one of my favorite points, it's no longer, you know, a Southeast Conference for schedule versus a Big Ten schedule. It's not. And, you know, I'll use my team, Penn State, as the, you know, obvious example this year. And it's kind of a national story. You hear national guys will talk about it. Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana are the definitive top 3 teams in the conference going into the season. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance they won't be at the end? There's a chance. But going into it, and Penn State plays none of those 3. And yes, they have a cupcake out of conference schedule also. So there's a huge difference. And you compare that to, you know, Ohio State's schedule, and especially with Ohio State playing Texas. And I have no love for Texas. I really have no love for Ohio State. Okay? But with that said, kudos to them for playing each other out of conference. Yeah. That's a sensational game. And although I don't think it really happens anyway, those teams should, the loser of that game, especially if it's competitive the way it was last year, and I don't think they'll get punished for that loss. Yeah, you're better off winning that game. But
correct.
If either one of those teams is a three-loss team and they're in the hunt for a playoff position, that will be the tiebreaker, the schedule that they had, Dustin.
Yeah, for sure. And again, if one of those teams loses and gets knocked out, they'll say, well, if we would have just scheduled, you know, Miami of Ohio, we would have been in the playoff. And so I wish, you know, to me, I understand you don't have as many teams. I wish they would incentivize it more than they would penalize it. So Ohio State, if let's say Ohio State wins that game, Ohio State, yeah, you get, there's some way reward. I don't know why that was so difficult, but there's a way to reward Ohio State for winning that game. We're not really going to penalize if Texas ends up losing three total games, and let's say they lose to, I don't know who's on their schedule, so I'm just making stuff up. Let's say they lose to a top five Ohio State, a top five Alabama, and a top 10 LSU, but you have some, you at least, let's say you have some quality wins. It's not just all over Mississippi State and some of those other bottom feeders in the SEC. If you have some quality wins on there, guess what? We're not really going to penalize you for the Ohio State loss because you had a tough schedule and you were willing to go play that game. I think that's a way to, because college, that's what college basketball does. If you schedule a tough non-conference like Purdue, I'm just using this as an example. Purdue plays Gonzaga game one. The loser of that game is not going to really be punished. But at the end of the season, if they both are in the top 10, one of those teams could be a number, you know, it could be the difference between a 2 seed and a 3 or 4 seed.
Well, that's the thing. Every game should count for something. And to me, it's out of conference, but is Ohio State doesn't make a difference if against Texas and Oregon, they're 1-1. Doesn't matter which one they beat and which one they lost to. Should there be more or less value in beating or losing to Texas versus the same against Oregon? Should there be any difference?
Probably not.
Exactly. That's my point. It's on the schedule. The fact that they're playing both Texas and Oregon, that may be the same as playing Oregon and Indiana, okay? Versus, again, Penn State missing all three of those teams and not making up for it with their out-of-conference schedule. So Penn State, and I do think it's going to be the case, any tiebreaker for the playoffs, Penn State's going to lose because of their schedule. And I won't be upset about that because it's justified. And, you know, Ohio State, with their tough schedule, if they have two losses, they're still going to have three or four really quality wins that's going to have to count for something. So I think the reward that you're talking about should be there whether you beat a team in conference or out of conference, Dustin. Now, I stretched my answer out long enough to kill the clock. We are out of time. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.